On today's featured, we have the Orange Bird. So the Orange Bird is a character created as a mascot for the Florida Citrus Commission back in 1970 in exchange for sponsoring the Tiki Room attraction. Orange Bird, if you haven't seen it before, is a small bird resembling an orange, or you can also consider it an orange featuring with features of a bird. Orange Bird used to live more north in the United States, but decided to migrate down to Florida for its high quality of citrusy eat. It would end up living in the Sunshine Tree of Adventureland. But unlike other birds, the Orange Bird is incapable of singing or speaking, and instead communicates with orange-colored thought bubbles. Unfortunately for him, though, he is mocked by other birds, so as a result of this, Orange Bird generally looks for other friends wherever he goes. In the 70s, when he was created, they had an ad campaign, or Disney created an ad campaign for the Florida Orange, featuring Orange Bird, as well as singer Anita Bryant, telling this character story. But eventually the bird would fade into obscurity when Disney and the FCC severed their ties in 1987. But most recently, maybe not so recent, in 2004 in Tokyo Disneyland of all places, the Japanese actually became infatuated with the character, which came back during their Orange Day on April 14th of 2004. So there was a lot of merch that came out, and a lot of the Japanese fans loved it, and eventually it made its way back here in the States, on April 17th in 2012, when the Orange Bird made a proper return to the Sunshine Tree Terrace in the Magic Kingdom's Adventureland by the Tiki Room.
Wow, so yeah. Much history.
Yeah, so that's the Orange Bird.
I've always kind of wondered, because, I didn't know anything about Orange Bird except for its bird that's an orange.
Well, it's funny because it came to Florida to get orange when the Orange Bird is an orange. So, in a sense, he's a cannibal.
Ew.
But we'll get into more about cannibalism later.
This is a family show.
Remain seated, please. Permanecer sentados, por favor.
The marvelous galaxy.
Disney, yeah. Welcome to this week's Marvelous Galaxy of Disney. As we said, in the midst of all the craziness going on in the world with the strikes and everything, we still have a show. We're just not going to focus on any TV shows or movies in respect to those striking for better wages, because they are the backbone of what creates this media. So they do deserve better wages.
Yeah, and what they're demanding is realistic, Iger.
Yeah, $27 million. So, shall we start with some Disney?
Let's do it.
Okay. So we decided Disney.
Yes.
Okay. Disney. So, I'm really excited for this. Of course, yet another game Ooh. That comes out while I'm not employed. But I will be soon, and I will purchase this. Disney Illusion Island, Alan.
Ooh.
And we watched the preview for this.
We did.
I will say, maybe once I get the game, I'll like it more. But the animation is a little jarring to me. Because it's like not the new style of Mickey show. It's like a new style of Mickey.
Okay.
But it's not terrible. I don't hate it. That's just different.
Not like that Mickey shirt that you don't like.
Yeah, and if you ever get it, I'll burn it.
I have one.
I'm going to go burn it.
Wow.
So this looks fun because you can play as one of four characters, and it looks like four-player mode even. So you can play with all four characters involved. Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Goofy.
Ooh.
Too bad for Daisy's track.
Aw.
Aw, Daisy. But it says here, reveal the mysteries of Disney Illusion Island. Run, swim, swing, and jump your way through a beautiful yet mysterious island and discover rich biomes, intriguing characters, and hidden secrets. Fun with friends in four-player co-op. Play solo or grab up to three friends to save the island of Monith.
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 So, this looks it looks like Mario.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks very fun. So I'm excited for us, probably you, me, Jesse, Chris, to sit around and play this silly, stupid game.
Yeah.
What character would you be?
I would be Goofy.
I'd probably be Minnie, because she has the umbrella like Peach does.
I wish they had Oswald, but I know he's not part of the Fab Five.
He's not. Well, then it's not even Fab Five, it's Fab Four.
Well, yeah. Well, we don't
screw Daisy's drag.
We don't talk about Daisy.
Daisy. Yeah, but yeah, that comes out, I believe, before the end of August.
Okay.
I forgot to grab when it comes out, but it's very soon. It's very soon. In fact, I'll have a date for you by the time Alan talks about our next thing.
Yeah. So the next thing that we have here. So we talked about this before.
July 28th. That's when it comes out.
That's when it comes out. So, so we talked about this before, but the Joel Maggie Disneyland archives or museum with all the like different props and ride vehicles from Disneyland attractions. Well, the actual auction happened, and one of the people who were bidding on things is a pretty well-known actor. If you haven't heard of him, his name is Seth Green. And he was actually seen buying the bucket, the Skyway vehicle, at the actual event. There's like TikTok videos of him actually talking to one of the Imagineers who built it. And yeah, it's really cool. So he is a proud owner of that. And he spent a whopping $72,500 to get this thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see what it's going to like, what he's going to use it for. If it's just going to sit around in his home or, I don't know. I would maybe use it for like a makeshift bar or something, but it's still really cool. But yeah, congrats, Seth. You deserve it.
Yeah, thank you for playing Oz in Buffy, and thank you for playing Scott Evil in Austin Powers. You deserve your new toy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
speaking of cannibals.
Yeah. So yeah, this is the cannibalistic part that we that I kind of alluded to earlier. So first off, there is a set of books, kind of like an expansion pack, because I feel like there are already books about some of the villains, but there are more villains that have been featured in this kind of book series, and one of them is Scar. And in it, it actually, so I guess taking a step back even further, a lot of people were wondering, because the hyenas live in the elephant graveyard, there's not a lot of stuff there to eat. So people are wondering, like, how do they survive? And one of the theories is that the hyenas actually eat each other to survive.
Ew.
Yeah. And it's that theory is actually confirmed in this latest book based on Scar, Disney villain Scar. And yeah, there's one part where basically they're like, we can go eat Whoopi Goldberg's, I'm trying to find her name, Shenzi, Whoopi Goldberg's character, where it says, eaten your fill at feasts just like these, now it's your turn to be the feast, saluting that, you know, they're going to eat Shenzi. So yeah, the hyenas do, according to Disney, eat each other.
Wow, and has there been any, like, answer to the theory that Scar ate Mufasa?
No, but, I mean, it goes on with that theory.
You heard about that one, right?
I did, yeah.
Ooh.
Ooh. Mufasa.
Ooh. Mufasa. Ooh. Well, you know what cannibals all have in common?
What?
They wear clothes.
Yes. I'm very excited for this, obviously. But if you are a fan of fast fashion or H&M, H&M just recently came out with a new Disney 100 collection in collaboration with artist Trevor Andrew. So check it out on the H&M website. This actually just came out, I believe, last Thursday or Wednesday. But it's really cool. It's like not traditional Disney stuff that you'd see. It's more kind of like street arty. So they have a couple t-shirts as well as this really cool, it's like a Letterman jacket for $135. And yeah, they all look really cool. So check out the website. I actually ordered mine online and got mine 2 days later. So if you don't have an H&M near you, or if you're just like shopping at a store anymore, that's an option, and they ship pretty fast. So yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, you know who wears great fashion? Maleficent.
Yes, you do.
So I read Maleficent number one, and here's what I thought of it.
Okay.
So this is by Dynamite Comics, written by Sue Lee, also drawn by Sue Lee.
Okay.
Yeah. So this was a very dark, very graphic heavy. There wasn't a lot of reading to it, so it's a very fast read. So the story goes, little Renard is on the run from wolves, and he runs into the Forbidden Forest, where he happens upon who else but Maleficent, the ruler of the Forbidden Forest. So he's like captivated with her. He's like, yes, mama, get it with those horns, get it with that staff. Yes. So he's like bothering her, following her, not leaving her alone. And she's like, be gone with you, basically. So he follows her to her castle, and he does the ultimate no-no, Alan. You know what he does?
What?
She puts down her staff and walks away, and he's like, I want to be fabulous.
Oh.
I want to use the staff. Mm-hmm. So he grabs it, and he starts like trying to do spells. And Maleficent comes back. She's like, oh, no, we don't play with my staff. So she, like, force pulls it back to her.
Oh.
And then, yeah, she's a force user. I don't know if you know that. And dark side, obviously. And
she's your lightsaber.
She turns him into a wolf. Oh. A little tiny wolf. And wow. That's it. That's the end.
Did we also see an Annabelle doll?
No. I hate you. So I would say I didn't love it. Like, uh-oh. It was cute. I like the art a lot. The art's really good. But it didn't have, like, that hook in the end. Like, ooh, I want to read more. Ooh. It was just kind of like, oh, that's it? And apparently there is more. I just read a synopsis for number two. Apparently Renard's brother Gavin comes looking for him. So I guess that's where the story goes. But I wish we had, like, a hint of that at the end of the first one. Like, seeing him in the distance or something. But still worth checking out just for the art. But yeah. I think I got a little more out of Scar so far, number one, than I did Maleficent.
Well, they just don't want to give too much away so that they can sell more comics. That's how it works, right?
You're so comical.
Wow.
Anyway, you know it's not comical? So there are rumors, Alan. There are rumors. Mm-hmm. We didn't say our names, did we? I'm Sean.
I'm Alan. Done.
Done.
Go ahead.
There are rumors, Alan.
That's my name.
That Bob Iger wants to sell Disney.
Yeah.
To Apple.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah.
I don't like Apple.
Yeah.
I mean, they're fine.
It's just funny because a lot, like, the most infamous thing of Disney movies is the poison apple.
Oh, that's true.
And yeah. That's just funny.
That is funny. But yeah, it just seems like that's so much power. And now the rumor mill has kind of settled on he's looking more so to sell Disney Plus to Apple, which makes more sense to me. Mm-hmm. But some people are saying the whole company, the whole Disney company would be sold to Apple, which I'm like, the theme parks?
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot. Apple would have to pay a lot of money.
Well, and they just, I mean, I don't know, like, Apple In-N-Out, but I feel like it's just so odd that they would take over, because, like, they don't have experience in, like, theme parks and things like that. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just, like, the only thing I could see that is close to that would be, like, their VR stuff, but even then, it's like, so you're just going to make all their rides like VR? Well, welcome to Universal Studios.
Basically. And yeah, it's a weird thing to think about, because if Disney sells, let's say, Disney Plus to Apple, then do they not, like, where does it end What part of their movies do they own at that point? Like, is it just licensed to stream through like Apple Plus at that point? So it'd be like Apple Disney Plus or Poison Apple Plus. Yeah, it's such a weird time that we're in, seeing all these changes. Like, who would have ever thought we'd hear the words like Disney up for sale?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Walt would hate to see that happen too.
Yeah.
So I guess only time will tell, but it is a little sad. I mean, we were hoping for Iger to step in so things like this wouldn't happen, but I don't know. Yeah, like, would it be the same? I dare say it, but would it be the same if Chapek was still, you know, involved?
I think it would be worse. I think Chapek would have continued to do shady things to try to look like there's a profit, to make it look like he's not as bad. I think Iger is just doing what Chapek would have had to do, but honestly.
Mm. But Chapek wouldn't sell to Apple.
I know, why Apple?
Yeah, I don't... Well, I mean, but at the same time, too, it's interesting if he were to do that, because he, you know, he did just sign a 2-year extension as well to his... Like, I feel like that would be something he would do at, like, the end of his career, when he's just like, okay, I'm going away, but it's...
Well, to be honest, this thing would probably take at least 2 years to... Because it has to be approved by the... Is it FTC?
Like... Oh, the... Yeah.
Yeah, it has to go through all that paperwork and get approved. Make sure
it's not part of a monopoly or something.
Yeah, which, I mean, it kind of is.
So, I mean, if that's the case, then, yeah, they wouldn't let them do that.
Well, I thought they would stop Disney from buying Marvel, LucasArts, or Lucasfilm, and Pixar, but they haven't stopped them yet. So
yeah. I mean, it depends on how much of the market they cover. So
yeah. True. Soon they're going to own the whole galaxy. Galaxy.
Galaxy. So, another thing that's related, Comic-Con is here in San Diego, and unfortunately we can't talk a lot about it because of, you know, the strike, but one thing that we can talk about are the video games, and one of them is Star Wars Outlaws. So we already had the trailer that came out, so like, what else is there to kind of talk about? Well, they actually had a panel at Comic-Con, and the creators of the game actually gave more information of when the story takes place and why, actually. So the game picks up after the Battle of Hoth, and this was decided by Massive, who is the company behind the game. They pitched it as an open world scoundrel game to Lucasfilm, and it's basically they think it's a perfect window for this story because the Empire is as strong as ever around this time, so they're too preoccupied with the rebels and other things. So other things are kind of like overlooked. So in that time, a character that's brand new to the game is Kay Vess, who is a brand new thief pretending to be Moore, will try to survive along with her pet and best friend Nyx, as well as an enforcer droid named ND5, who served in the Clone Wars. So yeah, there'll be new characters, and it's kind of cool to see this in an open world that's not, you know, too focused on the Empire.
Yeah, that's pretty fun. I'm gonna play that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad it's not like, is it? It's not an online game, is it?
I don't think it is.
Okay, good. Yeah. I get sick of this.
Yeah.
Star Wars Battlefront. It was fun for a little while, but I don't always want to play against people online. Sometimes I just want to play by myself.
So it'll be out for PlayStation 5, Xbox, and the PCs in 2024.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hopefully I have a job by then.
Hopefully.
Because we are light on stuff to talk about without TV and movie, I thought I'd give a quick rundown of the three-part epic, three-part in, like, bunch of comics each part, of War of the Bounty Hunters, Crimson Reign, and Hidden Empire, which I just finished reading.
Cool.
So War of the Bounty Hunters, I'm going to be real honest here. It felt like kind of a waste. I mean, it set up the other two arcs, which is cool, but like, the whole story was basically like the bounty hunters wanted to steal Han Solo frozen in carbonite from Boba Fett. But when we already know that Boba Fett is the one that delivers it to Jabba, it just felt like and then this person got Han, and then this person got Han. You're like, okay, this is cool. When does it get back to Boba? But it did set up something really cool. It set up the return of Kira, who is now Lady Kira. Do you remember Kira?
I do.
She was Han Solo's girlfriend.
Yeah.
In Solo, a Star Wars story. Solo, a Star Wars story? Yeah. And so it gives us answers to, like, you know, it revealed that she was working for Darth Maul and Crimson Dawn at the end of the movie. And we never get anything else to that, but we get it in these comics, which is really cool. So Lady Kira has taken over Crimson Dawn. She has replaced Darth Maul since he died on Tatooine fighting Kanan. And she has a plan to kill the Sith.
Oh.
Yeah, she's tired of the Sith reigning over the galaxy. She knows, because of Darth Maul, she knows that Palpatine is Darth Sidious, and she wants to take him down. So in Crimson Dawn, or Crimson Reign, I always say Crimson Dawn. In Crimson Reign, we get, it's kind of that middle saga where, like, not a lot happens, but it's like the gathering of stuff and revealing of stuff. So this one is really cool in that there's this part, I loved it, where Vader fights Kira. And it's epic because you would think he's like the Dark Lord of the Sith. Like, you can't fight Vader and survive unless you're a Jedi or a Sith. So they revealed that she was trained by Darth Maul while he was alive. And one thing that I freaking loved, Alan, is they revealed that she also knows the arts of the Taras Kasi, which is an ancient fighting technique.
Oh.
This was a video game from the 90s. These comics pulled in everything. There was a game called Masters of the Taras Kasi, and they used it. I flipped when I saw that. I was like, yes, bring it in. Bring it in, hunty. I'm very hunty today. So she fought Vader and held him off. And then there was this great part where Vader was walking with Palpatine, and Vader was like, her fighting style seemed familiar. Mm-hmm. And Palpatine's like, how so? And then Vader was like, it reminded me of your fighting style. And they both stopped because they realized, oh, wow, she learned from Darth Maul. So that's how they realize kind of where she is, why she's strong and everything. She meets this cool new character called the Archivist, which she has very pale blue skin and white kind of dreadlocks. And she's really cool. I liked her original story because the Archivist figures out that Yoda's alive and that he's on Dagobah, and she actually goes and finds him. So I thought that was interesting. Like, people did know about Yoda. He wasn't as smart as he thought. But since she's good, she left it. She didn't tell anybody he was there. But I still like that she went and met Yoda. So from there, she also, what I really liked is she needed a dark side of the Force user. And knowing that the Sith are her enemies, she went to none other than, can you think of anybody that she might have gone to tie all these movie trilogies together?
Jar Jar Binks.
Ew. The Knights of the Ren. Knights of Ren.
Okay.
So by this time, like, she has this whole empire. She's got people in Crimson Dawn working in the Empire. She's got people working in the Rebellion. She's got Knights of Ren on her side. Kira is a bad butt. Like, she is a really cool character at this point. So this leads us into Hidden Empire. I know I'm giving a really quick rundown, really bare bones, but I just want people to know kind of what it's about because it's pretty cool. We find out what everything's being led to in Hidden Empire is Kira wants to use the Fermata Cage, which is apparently an old Sith device that can trap a Sith. So apparently there is a Sith trapped in there that she wants to release to fight Vader and Palpatine. This is what she tells people. At this point, too, Dr. Aphra, who we've talked about, who's like the Indiana Jones of Star Wars, and also, I will say, pansexual. She has a girlfriend at this point. She is, what's the word? When somebody is possessed, she's possessed by the Spark Eternal, which is this very powerful being that is inside of her and taking control of her body and giving her powers. There's this whole little group, Santa Staros and other people that are kind of traveling with Dr. Aphra at this point. So everything comes to a header, to a climax around the Fermata Cage. because the archivist sets it off, and they know right when they set it off, Vader and Palpatine are going to feel it, and they're going to come running to that cage to stop it. So whoever's there, they're going to tear through. So what's really cool is when they get there, the only thing to stand between them and the Fermata cage is the possessed Dr. Aphra. So she gets into battle with Vader, and she's kind of holding her own, and then Vader just suddenly gets tired of her and, like, pushes the Spark Eternal out of her, leaving her just Dr. Aphra. So she has no chance of beating him at this point. But she does escape with the help, with a little help from her friends. Mm-hmm. The Fermata cage opens, and it's revealed that Kira's ultimate plan was to trap Vader and Palpatine in the cage. There was not a Sith in there. They were to be the Sith that would be in the cage to trap them until somebody opens it. What's crazy about this is it freaking works. She traps Vader and Palpatine in the Fermata cage, and the only thing that goes wrong is the last second, the Knights of Ren working for Kira are like, guys, she can't beat them. Like, they're going to get out, and they're going to be pissed at us. Mm-hmm. So they, at the last second, betray Kira and free Palpatine and Vader. They destroy the Fermata cage.
Wow.
Expecting to be rewarded for this. So then they go down to meet Vader and Palpatine, and Palpatine's basically like, thank you for freeing us. I don't owe you anything. In fact, I'm going to kill all of you except for your leader, and your leader will now be enslaved to me forever.
Wow.
So this kind of leads into why the Knights of Ren work for the dark side in the later movie. Which I thought was also very cool. I like that it brought in Kira, the Knights of Ren, all these different things. So it kind of ends with Kira is thought to be dead. It shows her on, I believe it was Tatooine in the end, kind of by herself. And what's crazy is part of her plan was to cause chaos for the Empire. So one of the things that she did before the Fermata cage is she actually gave the plans to the second Death Star to the Rebels. So she's the one who orchestrated that and got them the plans. So it ends with kind of an uplifting thing with, like, Luke and Leia basically saying Kira's goal was to destroy Palpatine and Vader, and she actually did succeed, just not in the way she thought. So I like that ending.
Yeah.
So at this point, though, it's unclear what happens to Kira. I wonder if they're going to use her in future things, because this is all canon. This is all what happened between Empire and Jedi, or during Empire and Jedi, I should say, because some of it's, like, during. But, yeah, they could easily put her in The Mandalorian or Ahsoka or any show or any later comics.
Cool.
Is this something that you'd be wanting to see eventually, this story, like, told through a cartoon or movie?
Yeah, as long as it's not through a comic book that I have to read.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to be the death of me. Marvelous, marvelous. Marvelous. So we have another death announced from Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
This one's not as, I think, hated as the death of Miss Marvel, who's already back to life, was.
Mm-hmm.
So they announced the death of Moon Knight. So Moon Knight is going to die in what's called the Last Days of Moon Knight, set to run from Moon Knight 28 to Moon Knight 30. I believe this is happening around October 18th is when it starts. So he's going to die then probably by December of this year, right before Christmas.
Wow.
So kind of what's going on right now is one of his enemies has been the Black Spectre. And there's been two different Black Spectres so far in the comics. Where I am right now in Moon Knight, like, he was parading as Black Spectre. So apparently another Black Spectre rises, and that's the one who apparently kills Moon Knight. So yeah, not a lot on that yet. How do you feel about them killing off your man?
I mean, I don't know. I'll see it when it happens and then see what happens after that for a Marvel character. Yeah, I mean, I'm not... too saddened about it, I guess.
Yeah, what typically happens in Marvel with their deaths is one of two things. They either come back and retake up the mantle, as we've seen many times, or they come back as, like, someone who helps a new character in that mantle. Because it is said there is going to be a new Moon Knight, so they're just making room for a new character.
Yeah.
But he'll probably... the old Moon Knight will probably come back as a mentor.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the thing with Moon Knight, is he can't die. The god keeps bringing him back, Khonshu. So, I don't know. This doesn't carry a lot of weight to me either.
Yeah. I'm just curious to see if that has any effect on the actual show. If we're even going to have a season two. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been wondering that too. I mean, they keep kind of teasing it.
Yeah.
And I think what this does at least is... it makes way for the changing of hats in the MCU. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, when Sam Wilson turns from Falcon into Captain America, people were just kind of like, well, yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, Ms. Marvel being introduced, it's kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, that's how it happened. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I kind of like this idea. I just wish that some of the tropes weren't as played out as they are.
Yeah.
Well.
Is that it for Marvelous?
Yeah, and for the first time in Marvelous Galaxy of Disney history, I'm going to do something a little bit different.
Oh.
I'm going to reveal the Mar-Gal Diz-Biz before we get into Parks and Rec.
Okay.
Why are you so okay with this? I'm messing everything up.
Because it makes sense, because we're going to talk about it in the section as well.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess. Yeah. Okay. So, last time we asked you, which of the new San Francisco foods were you most excited to try? In last place, with only 8% of the votes, was Beef Birria Ramen.
Wow.
Yeah. Only one vote. The San Francisco style street corn and the San Francisco clam chowder tied, both at 25%.
Wow.
Which leaves in the clear lead the Karage inspired crispy chicken sandwich at 42%.
Okay.
So I guess what that means is we did not let down our listeners, because that is the only of these foods we were able to try.
Well, it's funny too, because the one in last place was the food that we tried to get, but I guess it was so popular that it wasn't available when we tried it.
Yeah, or wanted to get true. It.
Yeah.
So we went on Wednesday the 19th when the food was released. You could either get the Karage chicken sandwich or the Beef Birria Ramen. We both mistakenly got the Karage chicken sandwich. Plus, it was really hot. I didn't really want the ramen.
Yeah. And just to clarify as well, too, it's just the food at the Lucky Fortune Cookery. The other foods that you can find at, like, the Aunt Cass's Cafe, which is currently right now the Pacific Wharf Cafe, the bread bowl isn't available yet, as well as the lotte at the Cucina Cucamonga. Those are available later. I believe the lotte is coming out next week, so we'll let you know when we try it.
Oh, wait, do you hear that? I think because we didn't officially do it, I think it's trying to play Parks and Rec. Parks and Rec. Parks and Rec.
Oh, wow.
What? It was trying to play while we were talking. I had to, like... But, yeah, so just like Alan said, just those two things out right now, Beef Birria Ramen and Karage Chicken Sandwich. What do you think of the chicken sandwich?
I liked it. So the chicken karage, that was really good. That's obviously, I would say, the best part of the sandwich. And I wish there was an option just to get that with, like, maybe a side of rice or something. But, yeah, so aside from that, like, the sauce that came with it was a little overpowering. It was, like, a little spicy and just kind of took over the flavor, which I kind of got tired of after eating the sandwich. And then also the bread itself, like, I wish they used something bit like softer. Like I think it would pair well with like a bao bun type consistency bread. So yeah, those were my only two complaints, but I mean, I would get it again. I actually got it twice on the 19th and then on Sunday as well too. So yeah, it's still worth a try, but it's not like super amazing.
Yeah, I would say, I think now that I think about it, my problem was the bread. Because, mm-hmm. yeah, I got to a point where I was like, this is good. I'm just tired of eating it.
Yeah.
And I really liked the chicken.
Mm-hmm.
The sauce didn't bother me as much. But, yeah, I just got, like, there's so much of this. And I think I even put some of it down and didn't finish it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would get it again also, but I'm more excited about the ramen and the chowder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not excited that they're both releasing during very hot times of the year.
And then we also got the Baymax macaroon as well, too, for dessert. I like, if you like sweets like me, you'll probably like it, especially if you like Nutella. And actually, I like this. Like, it's a shareable size as well, too. It's a pretty big pretty big size, so yeah, it's good to share with friends or other people. And then we also got the iced tea lychee drink as well too.
Oh yeah, make sure you get a boba straw with it, because they didn't the first time and the lychee got stuck in the straw. It was a pain to drink.
They have boba in the restaurant?
I hate it. But yeah, I really like the lychee tea. It's a little pricey at $6, and it's just like their basic tea that they serve there, but with lychee in it. But when you're paying like for something for a drink anyway, the extra $2 for lychee isn't that much more.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend it.
Yeah, and it's really refreshing during the heat too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just make sure you get that boba straw with it. If they don't give you one, demand your boba straw.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. And then you also got the yakisoba, right?
Yes, I got that today. That wasn't part of the menu, though. I didn't know how to talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
It was really good.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a kind of small portion, but I did get pretty full from it, I'd say. So I guess it's the right portion.
That's good.
That one is udon noodles. It was yaki udon, wasn't it?
Yaki udon, yeah.
Yeah, with veggies. And my favorite part about it is it comes with snap peas, which I love. And like some peppers and just a lot of yummy veggies. I would definitely recommend that. Both of the foods, including I guess three, including the Baymax, are all tails to me.
Yeah, they're all good. I'm really excited for this because I do like in general just that area of foods. Like, I feel like it's our go-to when we want to get like a meal at Disney or DCA. So I'm glad that they're just plussing up everything, and I'm excited to try all the other foods.
Well, it's just so convenient. It's all right there.
Yeah.
I just wish there's more seating.
I know. Yeah. That's especially covered seating.
Covered seating. Yeah. Yes. Cause yeah, when it was hot, seating was wasted cause nobody wants to sit in the sun.
Yeah.
No one wants to sit in the sun.
No.
That's not a song. What?
What? Yeah, I don't know how to transition to that, but
What I just said haunting to you?
Well, before we even get into that, if you plan on traveling to Disneyland Paris, or if you are in Paris, probably it's more applicable to you because this is more so for annual pass holders. They're no longer accepting pass holders on, or like pass holder scans on phones. You need an actual card to get into the park.
That's going backwards in technology.
I know. It's interesting why they're doing that. I mean, I would prefer that way anyways because I like scanning with physical things. That's why I like magic bands and things like that. But yeah, apparently now, like, if you don't have your card on you and you just have your phone, they won't let you in. So just beware of that.
Wow.
Yeah. Beware of ghosts, of hitchhiking ghosts. oh, but that's actually the wrong ride.
Kinda.
Yeah. But no, we're shifting over to Disneyland again, Splash Mountain. So I don't know if you would ever expect this, but there are some stories that Splash Mountain is haunted and it's seen or maybe felt during the construction of it being transformed to Tiana's Bayou Adventure, because there are stories of some of the construction workers experiencing kind of creepy things. One story is that they just leave tools around and then they go back to try to look for it and it's gone, and they find it in like the most obscure places. There's other stories as well too of like wiring being pulled out, and apparently there's like been like mini fires and explosions happening. So because of that, the construction could also be delayed here at Disneyland. So I don't know if this is like an old wives' tale, but some speculation of this. So someone, they're saying like the ghosts don't want this transition to happen. I don't know if there's just some like anti-woke person hiding in Splash Mountain trying to mess everything up, but yeah, it's just an interesting story. I would never, well, I guess I could expect it since it is an older ride, but it's just funny to think that there's could be ghosts in Splash Mountain.
Do you think they're like the worst ghosts of all, like angry Republican ghosts?
Well, we should then do an exorcism of that ride.
Oh no. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense. There's been different stories of different hauntings on different rides. Mm-hmm. And like, it makes sense because there's so much energy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You're at a theme park, there's so much happiness. Anger is multiplied there because it's a theme park.
Yeah.
So it would probably be a great haunt for different ghosts.
Yeah.
Plus there's so much history in that land.
I can just, I don't know, yeah, like if I was a construction worker in Splash Mountain, I just would always have like Five Nights at Freddy's in the back of my head while I'm like walking around through all these like animatronics.
Oh, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Stop it. Well, in a massive change of events, Alan.
Yes.
You have a cover Disney for us this week.
Yes. So if you are a fan of Aladdin, there is a...
Now you won't be.
There is, and apparently it's been out for a while. If you go on YouTube, it's posted by someone named Three-Way Asiska. Look up Fake Aladdin, A Whole New World Parody, Arab So Funny. Yeah, just take a listen.
If you dare.
Sean, what did you think about this?
Oh my god, I feel like you're making fun of me right now. This song is... Anyway, let's move on. Would you like to know your Margal Dizbiz question this week?
Sure.
You know, it's fine.
What?
I already had you answer it, and you didn't even know.
Oh, I think I know what it is.
Oh, well, you have the notes in front of you. So yeah, your question to Dave Favorites is, who would you want to play in a video game? Yeah. Mickey, Minnie, Donald, or Goofy?
Hmm. Yeah, mine has been updated, but yeah.
Wow. Cool. So I guess that brings us to our Favorite moment and then the end of our show.
Mm-hmm.
What's your Favorite moment this week?
I have none. No, just kidding.
Oh, your life sucks.
Probably, I was going to say something mean, but I won't.
Because I'm in it?
we tried the beignets, and it's been a while since we had beignets. So yeah, that's probably my favorite moment, because I've been always going to the park like, I'm gonna get beignets, but like either the line is too long or like it's just not available. So yeah, finally had a chance to eat beignets, and they were yummy. The Mickey beignets. At Hungry Bear.
They're at Hungry Bear now.
Yes.
Because the restaurant that had them is closed.
Yes, because they're remodeling for Tiana's restaurant.
Tiana.
Yeah.
And they're being haunted by ghosts there, too.
Sure.
I'll say my favorite moment was going to Disneyland with Sonia. We had a fun time. We saw Rogers the Musical, which is now my third time. It's kind of funny because we didn't have virtual queue. We weren't on the list or anything this time. So we ended up sitting all the way up on the balcony, the highest, right? Or mezzanine.
The balcony.
Balcony. We're all the way up on the balcony. I feel like it was a much different experience because people on the balcony didn't feel as into it. And like when my magic band started lighting up in the show, like, nobody else had magic fans around us. Somebody was like, his watch is lighting up.
Which I would expect the opposite, because like if you're just like a one-day park goer, I would want that premium experience to sit downstairs versus like a pass holder, like I can always go back to the show.
That's true. The only thing that sucked is the escalator is out, and walking up all those stairs, Sonia and I were so out of breath. I was trying to hide it from her, and she finally said, I was like, oh, thank God, I can say it to you, too. So, yeah, still a great experience. I mean, we got there at 12 for the 12:15 show, and were able to get a seat. This was on a Wednesday, though. And there were seats still available at showtime. Not many up on the balcony, but there were still some. So,
yeah,
it's something that it seems like you can just walk into.
Yeah.
I don't know about weekends. I haven't seen it on a Saturday.
Or Sunday.
Stop it. Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Marvelous Galaxy of Disney. Now you can find me, if you are at, go on TikTok, you can find me on DizGuyAllen, where I just post a bunch of Disney stuff, news, or just random stuff. So do that and follow.
Yeah, and you can catch up on episodes of Solving for X. We're doing the original X-Men show. I was going to say series and then show and series. It's on pause at the moment because of the strike. Or you can find me also with Kevin on Words of the Witches. We're reading through the Charmed comic book, season 10. And you can travel with my company, Mine and Victoria's company, My Magical Journeys. And my book on Amazon, which is Brew a Dream Awakening.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.